You're listening to The Last Word, Conversations with Writers. I'm Carly Neufeld. My guest today, Gary Bengier. And Gary is the author of an extraordinarily exciting science fiction book called Unfettered Journey. And Unfettered Journey is an existential adventure for the mind and a lot more besides. Welcome to The Last Word, Gary Bengier.
Well, thank you very much, Carly. I'm just delighted to join you and KSFR here, and for two reasons. One, I love Santa Fe as a member of the Board of Trustees of the Santa Fe Institute. I've been down there several times a year for the last 20 years. What a lovely town.
Great, yes.
And the second is I just learned something about your background that maybe part of your audience doesn't know, and that is that, quote, as an avid reader since you were 7 years old, you had to sneak into the boys' room of your local library to get to the children's science fiction section.
Oh, my God, you did read that. It's absolutely true. And the boys' room, of course, the boys' section of the library, was in England. It was all very, I lived in a very little conservative town.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, all of the boys, all of the war stuff, all of the science fiction, and more besides, was all in the boys' section. And I had to sneak in. It's absolutely true.
Well, there you go. So now, for those reasons, first, because you have some love of science fiction, and I would suspect hard science. And
yes.
Secondly, because you had the chutzpah to do that, you're my perfect reader. You know, I think you're going to you perhaps are loving my powerful women characters.
I'm very impressed, and wondering if this book becomes a movie, who you would choose. But that's not. I won't ask you that question now. Just be thinking about it. Also, something else. Another connection. 30 years ago, I was a research assistant. Let's just say that was a grand name for a secretary to a researcher of artificial intelligence. And artificial intelligence is the core of Unfettered Journey. And 30 years ago, it looked like we'd have it by now. In an everyday way, we'd even have conscious artificial intelligence. However, we don't have it in that way. I mean, we have things like Siri, we have Alexa. Where are we now, and what is happening 140 years in the future, which is where Unfettered Journey is set?
Okay, well, those are wonderful questions. So I'll give you my perspective in general, and this is a hard science view of the future. And what that means is, I think that many science fiction writers have given up in some sense. You know, if you wrote a book before 2007, you might not have seen the coming of the iPhone. And then your plots are all wrong, right? And so it's hard to predict the future, and there's a lot of science. And therefore, if you give up and then you have dragons and you have, you know, very non-scientific things, faster than light spaceships, And I think that that does a disservice because the general public then has a poor understanding of what is realistic and what can we actually build. And if we think in those hard science terms, then we can have a better ability to predict what will happen. Although, you know, the world is nonlinear; it's a complex adaptive system.
Mm-hmm.
But we have some better chance to ask the right questions and then perhaps to better plan.
So what is the right question? I mean, I'm asking you as you're not just a writer, you're deeply researching this world. What are the questions we should be asking? Not me as an interviewer, but scientists.
Okay, so let's just focus on your first question of AI and robotics. So, you know, I fully believe that it and bioscience will be the two major technologies impacting human existence in this next century. Okay? And I think this bioscience will solve all kinds of problems with disease. In 140 years, we should solve cancer. We will live longer on average. And so that will happen, I think, if you just extend. You know, what has happened with CRISPR-Cas9 and the latest biotechnology is just phenomenal. and most people don't understand that.
Well, let's mention, without giving too much away, that biotechnology in your book, includes things like we have embedded chips in the book. You get microbursts of caffeine. You get your blood pressure. You get your vital signs are just automatically taken all the time. Tell me a few more that listeners
yes.
will be
well,
fascinated.
And I think that's an obvious extension from today's technology. Mm-hmm. There are people that suffer from certain conditions today that actually have microdosing of chemicals, like to regulate certain kinds of things. Now, it's very primitive, but you know, you move that forward 140 years, and it will get better. And we're already talking about genetic DNA sequencing for individual people so that your medications will be tied to the individual person. Again, you fast forward that 140 years, and it will be better. So I think we will live longer. So.
Well, but how are we going to... Well, no, this is probably not the right question, but how do we get past everybody right now? It's invasive to wear masks. How on earth are we going to get past what is considered invasive to embody a chip monitoring our health 24/7?
Good question. So let me focus, though, on the other technology for a moment,
okay.
not the bioscience.
Yes.
But let's focus on AI and robotics. So I have what maybe some futurists would think is a fairly conservative approach. On the one hand, we see enormous changes in AI and robotics, you know, deep learning algorithms. If you look at the videos with, for example, Boston Dynamics and their robot dogs, I mean, it all seems pretty gee whiz. But my actual view is that it's more like the automobile. You know, the automobile took a century to develop to the machines we have today, because you have not only to develop the basics, but then in that case you've got windshield wipers, you've got all the electronics now, you have all the social infrastructure with the roads, you have the legal system to deal with what happens when you have accidents. And all that takes a long time.
Mm.
And so I think that's true of robots and AI. I think it will actually take a long time. So I think there was a study by one of the major consulting firms that suggested that by something like 2050, you know, 50 to 70% of the jobs would be automated. I don't believe that. I think it's harder and longer. But a good model is one that I saw presented at the Santa Fe Institute in a workshop about a year and a half ago called AI and the Barrier of Meaning. And the idea was to think of jobs as sort of a topology landscape with hills and valleys. And the AI in robotics is like the water level rising and subsuming more jobs. And then at the top of those hills are, you know, more difficult things like strategy. But I would also submit that at the top of those hills are jobs such as roofer, okay? Because it's really hard to climb up on the roof with a bunch of shingles. And you know, roofers will be paid more and more and more money until such time as it makes sense to automate that job.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now if I just talk about that, again, I said I was conservative, it takes a century. Don't you believe that it will eventually happen, that we will continue to improve the machines and that they will eventually be able to do more general purpose things?
And, of course, we already have, you know, robotics in surgery.
Yes.
But going back to how you approach this in the book, there's a thread all the way through of consciousness, AI and consciousness, artificial intelligence and robots and bots they're called,
yes.
having consciousness, free will, our free
yes.
will and their free will. Please speak to that.
Well, so you're getting to what motivated me in the first place
yes.
to actually write this book. And so after a career in Silicon Valley, I sort of turned to passion projects, and I actually went back to school for nearly a decade. And I was studying physics and philosophy as an undergraduate again to, you know, backfill most of an astrophysics degree, and then backfilling an undergraduate degree in philosophy because that was interesting. you know, sitting all of the labs in the physics, etc. And then I completed that process with a master's degree in philosophy philosophy of mind. And so that led me to think deeply about what is human consciousness and what our minds actually are. And so I was thinking about these questions a long time, and that led to some of the themes in the book.
And yes, some of the themes, and there are many cross themes. We've got the protagonist, Joe, who's really exploring. Do you see yourself as Joe?
Well, I'd like to think that that everyone sees themselves as Joe. Mm-hmm. The book is from one point of view. That's Joe's point of view. You actually get to see a first person as well as a third person view, so you're sort of inside Joe's head as he's thinking about the world and what he sees. And so it is, in that regard, another aspect of exploring our own consciousness. You know, what is that I at the center of your existence? You know, what is that?
Yes. That's a question I think we all have at some point. It's like, wait a minute, how do I know I've got an I? You know, am I outside me looking in and realizing I'm an I?
Yes. So that's pretty fundamental to who we are. Now, the part of the philosophical adventure that I was on personally was to, you know, for example, deal with some of the questions of determinism. There's a lot of folks who believe in sort of a more deterministic interpretation, those then conclude that, well, we have no free will whatsoever. It's all determined. It's all particles in motion. And I think the average person, that doesn't jive with their existence. And so while many philosophers go along continuing these statements and these theories, it doesn't reconcile. So now we can ask ourselves, is that because the average person is just not smart enough to keep up with those philosophers? Or is there something fundamentally flawed with that argument? And I think the latter.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, but perhaps the latter.
There is the book Unfettered Journey. I also wrote an appendix called Unfettered Journey Appendices, and it is actually a sort of a deeper, more rigorous academic exploration of some of those themes. And so the novel is a more approachable way to delve into some of those themes. But I think that the average intelligent reader is up for something a little bit different than just a genre book, and something that challenges them to think deeply about these questions that they're important to all of us, right? Why are we here? What's your purpose in life, and why do you do what you do, right? And
exactly.
Is there any moral framework for what you do?
The moral framework for what we do, so important. You know, there's a wonderful glossary at the back about, maybe 10 pages of all of these words. Some of the brand new words that you perhaps created for 2161.
Yes,
but there are
exactly.
Other, of course, mentions of people, Schrödinger,
yes.
And various other scientists all the way in the past. Carl Friedrich Gauss is one mentioned. But there's also something, you know what I needed in order to prepare for this interview? I needed a nest, N-E-S-T, because I'm going to have you explain what that is, because I have a lot of scribbled notes in my book here. I have your website open on my iPhone. And I have the book itself with lots of those little tiny post-it tags.
Okay.
It would have been much handier to have a nest. So why don't you please explain.
I'm happy to describe a nest. So a nest is an abbreviation for a neural to external system transmitter. So imagine your iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the generation 5.0? I mean, we already know that Google tried to do Google Glass, which looked kind of silly, and no one's going to wear that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's Google Glass 1.0. What does Google Glass 5.0 look like? Well, you can imagine that we could embed something in the corner of our cornea, like a little something that's hooked up. And I think a week ago, Elon Musk demonstrated the Neuralink, and it's essentially part of the key is something about the size of a nickel that is embedded into your skull that has little wires that kind of feed into your brain. And, again, that's really beginning. But imagine that you took your iPhone, and chips will get smaller, and, it's inserted in behind your left ear, right? And it's connected electronically to the corneal chip that you can almost see like a screen. And, you can just basically speak, and it picks up your voice through your jawbone, and it translates your words, and it's connected to the Internet, the cloud, right? And so now you have got your iPhone in your head. Can we all imagine that in 140 years that's completely possible?
And that it's not only possible, but it's normal and accepted. So that my mind is thinking, my mind's listening to you, and I'm going, you know, if this was a class, I'd want to put my hand up and interrupt you. My mind is already ahead because the Nest embedded in my, behind my ear, knows that I'm thinking that it's already preempting the next question.
Well,
and your Nest is preempting.
Well, not so fast. No, so
no?
Again, I'm conservative on this stuff. So,
okay, good.
You know, human evolution over a million years readied us for running away from the tiger, right? But it, the human mind does not work at that fast. It works at chemical speeds, right? And there's lots of folks who think we're going to be, become cyborgs. I just think that is silly, because the computer chips work so many times faster than our brains. The interface is the problem. I mean, I imagine in this world that, for example, as a child and an adolescent, you will, learn a handful of words, maybe as many as 100, where you think them and something interprets them. And so in the conceit in the book, you'll walk around talking to yourself, and when you do, the Nest will translate what you spoke, because we as humans speak and have learned how to do that over a couple hundred thousand years. But reading our thoughts, that's going to be kind of clunky. So actually, we might only do that, when we're in polite society. We're sitting on an airplane, and, it's rude to talk out loud. So you'll use then the few keywords to do what you need to do. But no, I don't think we'll be machines. I think we'll be using the technology. The summary is that the technology will feel like an extension of what we do now, and it won't feel unhuman.
I like that, and I think that's really important for everyone to understand, that we will accept it in a way because it's acceptable, because it brings us further. It serves us.
Yes, and so again, that's where my hard science view is, that it's things that we can engineer and that are practical. And, humankind is not going to change materially because we've had a million years of evolution. And so we're not going to become cyborgs. That's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. But again, that kind of misleads people about what the real issues are.
Good, and you don't go there in the book. That was just my own putting a few threads together of my own thinking. Maybe a little worry there, but I don't feel worried about the future in that sense.
But there are things we need to be aware of and concerned about, and those are some of the social justice themes issues of privacy. I mean, as this technology evolves, we're going to continue to have even more complex issues of privacy. And how do we solve those? I mean, this is not going to be solved with, 280-character tweets. It needs to be thoughtfully dealt with.
And, of course, that also is in the book. You have, there's something called the Levels Act, social apartheid. The riots that are taking place 140 years from now because of the way people are separated in a very different way. We've actually only got 3 minutes left to talk about that. Do you have anything? Do you want to address it?
Well, yes. Yeah, so let me deal with that social justice in role topic. So the conceit in the novel, and this is something that if you just take the model of human productivity and roll it forward, you know, the world's economy growing by 1, 2, 3, 4% a year, and that's without substantial AI and robotics. And if you just go forward to 140 years. It's not unconceivable that the average person in the world will have 15 to 20 times more stuff than they do today. Okay. Now, if you add the fact that as soon as robots can make robots, right, then the productivity of the economies is not tied to our individual labor. And so, you, Carly, could have, 20 robots doing stuff on your behalf alone, right? Because the robots mine the metals, they mine the ores, they make the metals, they make the machines, they make themselves, and they chunk them out. And when that happens, we will be unlimited by stuff.
Yes.
So now who owns the robots? Right? That's a really important question.
Good point.
And so the conceit in the novel is that in the United States, because of our long history of property rights, there is a quid pro quo for giving up the ownership of the means of production, and that is a set of levels, 1 to 99. And, you're supposedly get a level on merit, but maybe not. Maybe it's there's some quirks in the system that are biases. And I ask the question, does that resemble anything that we have going on today in the world?
Really, and that's some of how that is dealt with and not dealt with. The journey of how it's dealt with is in the book. We've got just over a minute here, Gary. I think we better give websites. The book itself, unfetteredjourney.com.
Yes.
Unfetteredjourney.com. And your own website
is GaryFBenger.com.
GaryFBenger.com. And would you please spell that?
Yes. Gary, GaryF, Benger, BENGIER.com.
GaryFBenger.com. And that will be on the podcast description anyway when I write that up. Gary, it's been fascinating talking with you. It really is. I hope you come back to Santa Fe sometime when we can all fly freely.
Well, thank you so much. And, I think that we all need to work together to build this future that is the right future. And we need to work together to create that future.
Thank you again. Gary Benger has been my guest. Unfettered Journey is the book. I'm Carly Neufeld. Until next week, take care.